This is Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
Trainer Todd Pletcher has reached the stratosphere.
It was all have another for Doug O'Neill.
Moon over Miami for Bill Mott.
3,000 for trainer Mark Cassie.
Trainer D-Way Lucas, a 6th win.
And Bob Baffert with another incredible milestone.
But it was all for Chuck McGee.
Win number 1,000 for the great Trevor McCarthy.
Here's 2,000 for Nick Zito.
Steve Aspison is now North America's all-time leading trainer.
Now here's Mike Pena.
Hello again, everyone, and welcome to the show trainers listen to. It is Trainer Talk, and just like every week, it is presented by Fasig Tipton right here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Mike Pena, Baron of the Backstretch, happy to have you along for the ride for the next hour on Sirius 216, XM 204, streaming worldwide at horseracingradio.net and available anywhere you get your podcasts each and every week. Well, one of the things I really love about bringing you these Trainer Talk conversations each week is the incredible range of experience levels our guests bring to the table. Last week, I welcomed recently retired trainer Dale Capuano to the show. Only 21 trainers in the history of the sport have saddled more winners than the 3,662 career victories amassed by Dale over his 41 years as a conditioner. Today, I take you to the completely opposite end of the training spectrum, as my guest for the next hour has only saddled four horses in her career. But her winning percentage from those four starters is a Hall of Fame worthy 25%, because she's one for four. And that first career victory came November 27th in the first race at Woodbine with a horse named the Backstretch Dude, ridden by her husband. It's a fantastic story, as is her journey. Her journey to this point has taken her from her family's operation in Vancouver, Canada, to France, to Florida, and now back to her native land in Woodbine. Please join me in welcoming trainer Jennifer Stein to Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton. Jennifer, appreciate the visit.
Thank you. Appreciate being here.
I know it's been several weeks since that first win, but I'm sure it's still fresh in your mind, and I'm sure you're still kind of on cloud nine a little bit after the Backstretch Dude took care of business at First Asking.
Yeah, Justin and I watch his replay every once in a while, and brings a smile to our face every time. Can't wait to start his three-year-old campaign.
Yeah, we're doing this conversation in the middle of January. Woodbine is currently not racing, so you're on a bit of a break. What's your schedule look like right now?
We're taking it easy. I've got my saddle horse at a farm here in Erin where we live. We go out and ride her. We rock climb in the indoor gym. We spend lots of time with our two-and-a-half-year-old son, Benjamin. Go on some pretty cool adventures with our dogs. We've got a Siberian Husky and a Border Collie, so they keep us busy. Doing some home renovations. We tore up our floor on Monday, so starting that. We're busy, yep.
All right, you had me at Siberian Husky.
Yes.
I love those dogs.
He's a great dog. Yeah, he's a really good dog.
Does that fill the void? It sounds like you're pretty busy, even though you're not training. Does that fill the void for you at this time of year?
Oh, yeah, it keeps me busy. It keeps me from going a little bit stir-crazy and cabin fever during the winter, but it's all right, yeah.
When you are training, how on earth are you balancing all of those other things you just mentioned with your young son and with the dogs and with everything else? How do you keep it all those balls up in the air?
All we've got, my mom lives here. She's got one horse in training also that she claimed at the end of the year at Woodbine. So she helps lots. He's got daycare during the week, so it's really the weekends we kind of just have to work together and juggle. But we all do our part, keeping everyone happy, and it works really well.
When
will your family, you know?
Yeah, exactly. When will you get back into training again?
We'll start up the Backstretch Dude end of January at the farm my quarter horse is at. So he'll get started with her. They've got a big, it's pretty much a mile of a field that we can go around, get him fit on. They got a huge arena. It's a really nice spot.
let's go back to that afternoon of November 27th and the backstretch dude crossing the finish line first. Take me back to that day. What do you remember about the lead up to the race and then the backstretch dude winning the race?
The lead up to the race, I mean, you're always going to get a little excited as an assistant trainer. It's not the same feeling. I mean, you're excited to watch them run and everything, but when it's your own horse and, you know, bottom out of the sale, it's nerve-wracking, especially when you know that, you know, there's a good chance he could win. And we knew that going into the race, so makes it exciting.
You said you've gone back and watched the replays occasionally. How many times do you think you've watched the replay of the race?
Oh, God, I don't know. At least 30 times, probably.
Do you show all your friends when they come over, too? Is it one of those deals? Hey, check this out.
Oh, Justin shows it to everyone. People in, like, grocery stores, you know, if they're talking. Look at our horse.
You said the feeling is different when you're the main trainer as opposed to the assistant trainer, and it's a horse that, as you said, you selected this horse at the sale. We'll talk about that in a minute. But how is that feeling different, Jennifer?
Just doing all the decisions, you know, where my gut, you know, instincts, when we had to take time, you know, we had 2 months off from June to August, you know, it was my decision to go ahead with that. And, you know, it's a little, you know, my partner, he was a little iffy about it. He kind of wanted to keep going with the horse, and I just said, like, no, you know, he has some things to work out, some growing to do, and making those decisions, you know, your first year as a trainer, sometimes it can backfire on you. I mean, you're doing the right thing for the horse, but some people don't see it that way, right? But he needed it, and and he showed that he needed it off when he came back. He's a sensitive kind of horse. If he's got something going on, he's going to let you know, and it's your decision whether or not you listen. But yeah, that was probably what is difficult about that, you know, making those decisions.
The horse is owned by Isaac Waxman and his wife Tess, and there was a quote that you gave after the race. You said that they were screaming from the time that the race started. So put me there with you. What was it like watching the race with them?
It was hilarious. I was watching with my best friend, Holly, who paddocked him for me, and we were on the tarmac, you know, right by the wire, and I looked up, and Isaac and Tess and their two kids, they were just screaming from the time the gate sprung, and it was great.
Yeah, I can imagine. And that, you know, I've said this many, many times on this show and many of our other shows, that if you could bottle that feeling of watching your horse cross the finish line in front, that this would be the easiest game in the world to market and promote, because there's nothing like that feeling of your horse winning a race.
Nope. And for Justin, you know, it was like an equivalent to winning the Queen's Plate, you know, because it's, you know, he was so involved in bringing the horse up to that race. It was a lot of fun.
Yeah, we mentioned Justin, your husband, one of the top jockeys in Canada and certainly at Woodbine. He was aboard the backstretch dude that day. So what's it like giving a leg up to your husband and then having everything come together and win the race?
Perfect. Hopefully we can keep it going this year. It's a great feeling. Both of us, we had so much confidence in our horse. It was nice to see it come through.
How was he involved in the lead up to the race with the backstretch dude?
He got pretty well every day. I mean, Larry Muniz got on him when Justin was really busy, or if he didn't have, you know, many horses to get on, you know, Larry Muniz would come and get on him. But I mean, for the most part, Justin galloped him every day and breezed him every week. And, you know, he was right there with me when I, you know, made the decision to turn the horse out. So it was nice having that.
So you have your husband, you have the owners. You also had your best friend as part of the whole thing too, right?
Yep.
Who's that? Is that Holly Murray? Is that what you said?
Holly, yeah. Holly Murray, yep.
Yep. got to be part of the whole equation. So the whole thing came together for the entire team, and it was a special win for my special guest here today, and that is Jennifer Stein, her first career win from just four starters. I mentioned that win percentage now. You can say, hey, we win with 25% of our starters, Jennifer.
It was fun.
How many horses do you expect to have in training when racing resumes at Woodbine again?
I've got a filly who's on the, I believe the owners would like her to stay on the Alberta Oaks trail. Her name's Catch the Dream. She's coming out here to start up with me mid-March, mid to end March, weather depending at Woodbine. It can be a little, you know, a little touch and go, but she's going to start up with me. The Backstretch Dude, those are the only two so far that I have to start up. But, I mean, I can expect a few people maybe reaching out to say, you know, around time stall apps or do, hey, you want this? You want to start up this horse? Because that usually happens.
Yeah. Tell me more about the owners, the Waxmans.
Yeah. They're involved in standardbred racing. Isaac is down as trainer and Tess is down as owner. They have standardbreds on their farm. They breed, they pull out all their mares. They've been really successful in the standardbred industry. This was their first thoroughbred win. Justin actually rode their first thoroughbred ever. Her name was Addie Bear, just in the morning, but it was years ago. But so she didn't turn out to be a very good racehorse, but now they've got one that looks to be all right.
Well, it's such a cool story and such a great way to get your career off to a fast start. And I know, you know, certainly there are going to be more victories in the future for you and for Justin and for the entire team. How big is your team right now, Jennifer?
I'm the groom, so I groom them. I cool them out. I, you know, do all that stuff. I'm probably going to start back galloping this year. Hopefully all goes well. I've had some arthritis in my hips and my one knee since I was a kid, and then I had an injury at Del Mar when I was in California some years ago, so hopefully I'm sound and I can get on my own horses, because I'd really like to do that, except the Backstretch Dude. That'll stay Justin's mount, but for the most part, I do all my own work. If my stable expands, I'm going to employ people, but it's pretty much a one-man army right now.
Yeah, a one-lady army, and it's been a pretty strong start to get things off and running. Do you prefer to be the person getting on your horses in the morning and galloping them? Does that kind of give you a better sense of where that horse is at?
Sometimes. I mean, with Justin, he's really, you know, sensitive to horses. He'll tell me, you know, if anything's going on. So I don't worry too much about that. Plus, when I'm looking at a horse train, I can usually see certain things that you know, sometimes you wouldn't get a good feel for on their back, stuff like that. So it's beneficial either or. You know, if one looks a little hinky the day before, you know, the next day maybe I'll take it out for a jog, right, and just make sure that everything is working okay and it's just a stub toe, or if there's something more serious going on. But I don't think it really matters a whole lot, you know, if you've got a good eye, if you're watching your horses train every morning and, you know, getting out of the barn to go out with them and seeing their behavior going out to the track, you know, if they don't want to train and they're kind of, you know, you see some horses refuse to train sometimes, right? And that can always be a red flag. But, you know, if you're getting out of the barn and walking up with your horses and everything like that, I don't think it's a huge advantage whether you're on them or not. But it's definitely good to be able to ride in case you need to.
Yeah, I'm always curious, Jennifer, what are some of the things that you look for in horses that tell you they are doing well, that they're happy? Because horses can't talk to us, right? So you have to read their body language. What are some of the things that they show you that lets you know that they are where you want them to be, or they're moving in that direction?
Just you get that disposition, you know, they got their head up, they're looking for their hay, they're looking for their feed. You know, the backstretch dude, he sees Justin's truck pull up to the wash bay, and right away he knows, right? Whether he's got the tack on or not, he knows something fun is going to happen because my rider's here, and so he's got a really good attitude that way. You know, you don't want to see them cowering in the back of the stall or when they've got shavings dug up under their feet, you know, and their feet are sore. You can look for things like that. But, you know, just happy horses, ears perked, you know, watching other things going on outside and bright-eyed and, you know, just feeling good in their stalls, happy.
How about their coat? Does that have anything to do with it?
Yeah, their coat. Yeah, so the backstretch duties is a very healthy horse. I don't think, I'm pretty sure Tess, because he's at Tess and Isaac's farm right now out in Ridgeville near Fort Erie, and he's barely grown any hair. Like, he's still slick as a seal and got a great coat. He's always a very healthy horse, even after being castrated. Sometimes that takes a little of their coat away, but he's always been just a good-looking horse, healthy.
What do you think the ceiling might be for him? Any idea? Where do you hope it ends up?
What, him?
Yeah, for the backstretch dude.
I mean, I'm probably going to start the year out. We'll probably go for our non-240. And if he runs good going 6 furlongs, I'll stretch him out to 7/8. So I'd like to aim for the Elgin Stakes a week before the Ontario sales here in September. It would be around the end of August, that would be. That's my main goal. If we can get there, that'd be great. So that's what I'm looking at.
Visiting with trainer Jennifer Stein here on Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton. If you are just tuning into the show, she saddled her first winner on November 27th at Woodbine, and that horse, called the Backstretch Dude, is now looking to return to the races. And as she just outlined, his schedule will be set, and he will be moving forward going into the new year here. Let's go back to the beginning, Jennifer. You grow up in Vancouver. You were always around horses, so take me back there and tell me how you first got started.
Yeah, I didn't know if I wanted to gallop. Both my parents rode. So when I was about 8 years old, I was putting bandages on a mare named Skyborn for Tracy and Chris Loseth. I'm not sure if you've ever heard of them. Chris Loseth is in the Hall of Fame, Canadian mm-hmm. Hall of Fame. Here as a jockey, and Tracy was a really good trainer for Canmore Farm, and she really mentored me in doing horses up and, you know, letting me do up multiple stakes winning horses in her barn, an 8-year-old kid, you know. So she really got me on the ground working with these horses at a young age and identifying problems, cracked heels, any kind of scurf, any kind of rundown. I had really good people always back in Vancouver at Hastings Park. You know, my mom, she's really good with her homeopathic remedies. She makes up for horses. It's all natural. She makes her own braces, leg braces for horses.
Oh, that's cool.
My dad, he breaks babies for Peter Redekop. And then he kind of deciphers whether they go to California, Santa Anita, Golden Gate, or whether they stay up at Hastings. It just depends on the quality of the horse. So I got to break some nice babies with my dad at a young age. Alert Bay was one. He was in my article with Chris, and he made over $1 million. He should have run in the Woodbine Mile, but he never made it out here. I always had a lot of good mentorship in my life, and I think it really went a long way.
This goes back beyond your parents too, right? Wasn't your grandfather, wasn't he also a trainer?
Yep, he was a trainer as well.
Yeah. Well, that's cool. Do you get a chance to hear stories about your grandfather or anything?
Yeah, and I've got some win pictures, some old win pictures. He had a horse named Big Cheese. And it, which is kind of where the nickname Cheddar came for the backstretch dude, because he's kind of like the big cheese. So he had a big impact on my horse career as well. He had me holding horses that weren't always that nice. You know, when I was little, you know, 6 years old, something like that. I was pretty tiny. But he had one filly named Advent Road. She came out here. He sold her to a trainer named Eric Garcia. And she ended up going through a Kentucky sale at one point. I started watching Woodbine after he sold her, and then I decided I want to go to Woodbine one day.
Yeah, it's great because you've not only learned from the ground up, but you've learned at different levels. And what I mean by that is that you've learned, you know, in working with babies and working with horses that maybe weren't stakes caliber. And then you've gotten a chance, as you mentioned, to be around a horse like Alert Bay, who earns, what, $1.3 million in that career.
Yeah.
So you've kind of learned from being around all different types of horses, and that has to benefit you now too.
Yeah, definitely. Going to France really opened my eyes as well. I got to work for Freddie Head, mostly just the first 2 weeks I was there. They were prepping Solo. I'm not sure if you remember that horse. He won the Queen Elizabeth and the Sussex Stakes in 2015. And I actually got to ride him when I was in France while his rider was on holiday before he went to England. So that was a pretty big eye-opener, the horses there, the way they train, the way their trainers prep them. Some of the flat horses, some of them only train 3 days a week. And they're turned out or on the wheel the other four, and they're wild. And then you get the steeplechase horses, which I also galloped, and they train every day, and they are so strong. Just the different training for different horses. It's really neat, and being able to ride those kinds of horses was really, really cool.
Is there any kind of crossover in working with steeplechase horses and then the flat horses that make you a better flat trainer now from having worked with the steeplechase horses?
I think so. I think you learn steeplechase horses, they get the osteo almost every day, you know, working on their backs, their hindens, their lumbar, their bursa, just because it is so much strain in that area for a lot of horses. Also, they like to keep them longer and leaner, you know, as opposed to the flat horses, which are, you know, people like to keep the weight on. They like to keep them a little more robust, especially if they're a sprinter, you know, have that shoulder strength and that front end power. So I think it does transcend over being a flat trainer to a steeplechase trainer or vice versa. You just train them a little bit differently. That's all.
Yeah. What brought you to France?
I call it my quarter-life crisis. I was 25, and I was in Vancouver, and my friends were in France that I knew from California, and they just said, you know, we're looking for riders and people to work out here at Freddy's. Why don't you come out? And so I was like, okay. I packed a bag, and I was on a flight the next week, and I just found myself there. I was there for like a 3-month contract for John Hammond. He's not who I rode for primarily, but he was the one who did my paperwork to be able to ride there. So, that's how that came.
Yeah, before you ended up making that move and your quarter-life crisis, as you put it, you were working at Woodbine at the racetrack before that, right?
No, I was at Hastings, so I was working for Terry Jordan.
Okay.
He had trained Alert Bay those 2014, and then I was still working for him 2015 until about the middle of the year, and then I gave my notice and I left.
Did you spend some time with Steve Attard too? Is that right?
Yep, he was the first trainer I ever worked for at Woodbine, so that was 2012.
Okay.
I came out. My goal when I decided I wanted to train was to work for 10 different trainers. And no matter where it was, Canada, U.S., Europe, I really wanted to work for as many trainers as I could before going out on my own and taking bits of you know, information and techniques from all of them. And Josie Carroll was my 10th trainer at Palm Meadows.
Wow, your 10th trainer.
Mm-hmm, that I worked for, yep.
Well, incredible. And again, it comes back to what I said at the beginning of the show, when one of the cool things about Trainer Talk is that you hear such a variety of stories, and everybody has a different way. Some are similar, but there's always seems to be a little twist as to how everybody got to where they are today. And I mentioned Dale Capuano, my guest on last week's show. He didn't really work for anybody. He pretty much took out his trainer's license at 18 and just started training, yep, and learned on the fly, whereas you have all, yep, of this experience that you brought to the table before you went out on your own.
Yep. Yeah, I saw how the industry, you know, it's a tough industry to come into right now as a trainer. You really have to just be able to have your own back, I think. You need to, you know, learn how to work from the ground up and be able to assess horses differently. And because of staff, you know, there's always, you know, issues, right? So I think that's why I decided to kind of do that and wait a little longer to get my trainer license. I really wanted to make sure I was prepared.
Yeah. Yeah. And now you have, yeah, that experience of having worked with 10 other trainers, having worked not just in Canada, but having worked in Florida and worked in France, and all of that experience is combining to make you the trainer that you are now as you begin your own training career. So Jennifer, how would you describe your approach and your philosophy to training horses? How do you put that into words?
It depends. If you start out a baby like I did, I've always loved two-year-olds. I think that'll be my biggest strength as a trainer is two-year-olds, because working with my dad and, you know, really getting their mind, he always said, you got to slow the mind down to slow the feet down. And I think that's a really smart way to look at it. It's just, you got to really listen to your horses. You know, where our industry right now, we're so under the microscope, you know, how we take care of our equine athletes. And so you just got to do the best you can by them while you have them, you know, as it is a claiming racket and everything like that. I really pay attention. I think really paying attention to individual horses is key. I think it's important not to get carried away with numbers in your barn unless you have the staff to support it. Things, you know, you miss things and everything like that. So I just think it really takes, you know, paying attention and just making sure that, you know, all your I's are dotted and your T's are crossed.
What's the bigger challenge, working with the two-year-old horses or your two-year-old son?
Right now, my two-year-old son.
Not as easy to break him.
Climbing wall. Yeah.
Fantastic. Visiting with Jennifer Stein here on Trainer Talk, presented by Phasic Tipton. Jennifer, stay with me. We're going to get to a short commercial break. When we come back, we'll continue to talk about your career and the things you've learned from the people that you've had the chance to work with. We're going to do that next, right after this short break. It is Trainer Talk, presented by Phasic Tipton on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
Entries are still open for Phasic Tipton's Kentucky Winter Mixed Sale, to be held February 6th and 7th, 2023 in Lexington, Kentucky. Last year's sale produced record gross, with sales as high as $750,000. Offering in-foal mares, racing broodmare prospects, horses of racing age, and short yearlings, Kentucky Winter Mixed is a proven venue to sell breeding stock before the breeding season starts. Enter now for Phasic Tipton's Kentucky Winter Mixed, February 6th and 7th, 2023 in Lexington, Kentucky. Where will you be?
There's plenty to bet on at Gulfstream Park this January with the return of the championship meet, featuring live thoroughbred racing Wednesday through Sunday and the $3 million Pegasus World Cup on Saturday, January 28th. Enjoy the races outdoors from the Carousel Club or cool off at a private suite or a restaurant 10 Palms. For stake schedules, reservations, and tickets, head to GulfstreamPark.com.
A grade one winner on both dirt and turf, War of Will became a classic winner with this victory in the Preakness Stakes and added a grade one with turf credentials in the Maker's Mark Mile. From ages 2 to 4, this versatile son of War Front proved his class at the highest levels. Now his first foals have arrived. War of Will, standing at Claiborne Farm.
This is Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
Racing down to the quarter pole in the backstretch, Duke pushing away from them now by 2 lengths to Field Hockey. Silent Miracle starting to wind up from a mile back. Kinetic Stone's on the inside, but the backstretch, Duke opened up a big lead. 3 lengths, Kinetic Stone in second. The one running on is Silent Miracle, but from a long way back. The backstretch, Duke 2.5 to 3 in front. Kinetic Stone on the inside, pitching in a bit late, is coming. The backstretch dude holding on to win nicely by 1.5 lengths. Second, Kinetic Stone, 2 lengths to Silent Miracle. 8 lengths behind them, Dance and Deputy in fourth, and the time is 1:04:72.
Robert Keller with the call. That was November 27th of last year, and the backstretch dude giving my guest on today's show, Jennifer Stein, her first career training victory in just her fourth start, and it was a special one. I think you heard some people screaming in the background there. It may have been Jennifer and the owners, Isaac Waxman and his wife Tess, who were excited. They are standard bred owners. This was the very first thoroughbred win for them, so a lot of great storylines associated with the backstretch dude and that victory, that maiden win on November 27th. We'll continue to talk about that here in the second half of the show, but want to remind you, if you missed any portion of this program or any of our shows, all you have to do is head back to our website, horseracingradio.net. You can listen to the podcast whenever you have time, and you can also do that now on every major podcast platform. So whether you're accessing your podcast on Apple Podcasts or Podbean or Google, whatever it is, just go there, type in Horse Racing Radio Network, and you'll be able to listen to all of our shows as soon as they are posted once they're completed here on Sirius XM. Don't forget, too, that you can follow us on social media. @HRRN is our Twitter home, and Horse Racing Radio Network on Facebook, another way to keep in touch with all of the guests and the shows that we're going to bring your way here in 2023. Jennifer, you said you've probably watched the race more than 30 times now, and now you've had the chance to listen to it on radio as we were coming back from the commercial break. I'm sure that all those memories came flooding back again.
Yeah, it brings tears to my eyes and makes me laugh at the same time.
Yeah, such a happy moment for you. And it's kind of a culmination. You talked about working with, you know, 10 other trainers, and we talked about your travels to France and all those different things. But there are so many people that help a trainer get to a starting point. And you mentioned some of them, but Lauren Richards, you spent some time with Art Sherman, I know. There are others, but tell me about some of the other trainers that you've worked with and what their impact has been on you in your training career so far.
Yeah, I was in California right after high school. I went down in November and started working for Rod Cohn, who came out from Alberta with some horses. So I went down there, and I ended up staying. When he came back to Alberta, I just stayed down there. And, I had the pleasure of getting to know Art Sherman a little bit. I was helping out John Sadler and Al Stahl a little bit down there as well. But Art Sherman, he was a character, and he always, you know, gave me little pointers, not, you know, not big things, but just little things that, you know, you wouldn't think of all the time. He's a sharp little guy. He's really, really good person. That's what I can say about him.
You mentioned giving you little tidbits and little things that you wouldn't normally think of. How do you describe him as a teacher with somebody that's working underneath him?
He'd really pick out things. You know, he'd go watch a horse train and he'd come back and say, you know, tell the groom, like, really take care of that right foot today, or put a brand poultice on it, or, you know, he always gave people indicators on what to look for. He didn't just throw them to the wolves and say, you know, this horse isn't right, you know, figure out what's going on, stuff like that. He, you know, before he got the vet involved, he would try his own things. And I came to, you know, really respect him because it's not easy. You know, I think he had quite a few horses then. And every horse got that attention, you know, they all deserve. And I looked up to them that way.
Yeah. Yeah, it's interesting. And I've heard a lot of trainers come on this program over the years and say you have to be successful, you have to treat every horse as an individual and look at them separately from one another. You can't just have a program and say, here, you fit into this with every single horse.
No, you can't do that unless you've got, you know, million-dollar horses in your stalls. They're all going to have their own problems, you know, that come with them. Some of them, they just have that heart, you know, and it's funny, they'll train themselves, you know, a horse like the Backstretch Dude, I can tell, you know, he's got that big heart and, you know, he'll train himself. When he wasn't 100% before I sent him home, he just kind of trained himself. He wasn't too into it. You know, you really had to pay attention and you know, call it quits when you saw that.
How about Lauren Richards? Tell me about your time with Lauren Richards.
Yeah, I was with Lauren from 2016 all the way to 2019 when I got pregnant with Benjamin. That was my last year. And he is just an all-around, just such a good horseman. Dry sense of humor. You know, an agent and a jock will be walking down the shed row and he'll say, tell him I'm dead, and run out to the hay bin, you know. He's a really funny guy, but, you know, he was like a dad to me in a way when I was working for him. He's just so good. You know, like if I came in one morning, a horse had a little bit of heat in his knee, walk him, you know, and then you start up. And it seemed every horse we had that year, I think we had 8 horses, I think every horse won in the barn.
Wow.
And, you know, that's not easy to do. And, I mean, we might have given a couple time off, you know, but they mostly just got what they needed at the track. They got their time off. Some horses got 2-3 days off a week, you know, and they went out and they trained really good and everything. But you could tell, like, he was one of those trainers that, you know, they had to go out there looking 100% every day for them to make it to the races. And I respected him a lot for that, especially a trainer. You know, he doesn't do much as far as doing them up goes. You know, you don't really find any sweat or DMSO or, you know, Furison or Poultice or anything like that. It's, you know, you really got to work as a groom. And I think that's a bit of a lost art in a way, you know, being a real hands-on groom. And I think a lot of that comes from coming from Vancouver. You know, you don't have that luxury of spending a fortune on your horses, you know, and giving them the best of the best all the time. Sometimes you just have to use what you have and really use elbow grease and, you know, spend 5 minutes per leg, you know, giving your horses a good rub down. And I, you know, I learned a lot from him, 45 to an hour in the stall with every horse, you know, doing them up. It goes a long way.
Well, yeah, I mean, those lessons are invaluable as you embark upon your own career now. And it's just part of what's making you the trainer that you are today because of all the different people that you worked with. Who were some of the other people, Jennifer, that you had the chance to be around and learn from?
I'm trying to think now. At Woodbine, I mean, I only worked for Steve Attard and Lauren Richards. Mm-hmm. Steve has a really good assistant foreman, Monica. She's been there for I don't know how long. She's still paddocking horses. She's got to be in her mid-70s. I mean, she's been there forever. She's a very good groom and a good all-around horse person. She's really soft and everything like that. But I got to gallop the horses I groomed at Steve's barn. So I had 4 that I galloped and groomed, and I think that was, like, very beneficial to me. I really got to understand the horse as a whole. You know, from the brain to the feet to the back to the neck, it's, you know, everything. So that helped a lot. Terry Jordan and Anita Bolton, when I was with them in Vancouver, Anita is a very detailed person. She can spot a horse off a hair, you know, from a mile away. And I learned to watch for things with her, take horses out to the pavement and jog. And, you know, horse would look fine, you know, coming at you one way, and then it, you could see going another way. So I learned that kind of stuff from her. Trying to think, Tracy McCarthy, that was when I was younger. My dad.
Josie Carroll comes to mind, right? You spent a little time with Josie?
Yeah, not long, just at Palm Meadows for a little bit. And but Susie Lorimer, her assistant, she's really knowledgeable. She worked for Atfield for years as a rider and an assistant, and she's a really, really good horsewoman. Josie herself is also a really good horsewoman and tough as nails. You know, she's just a really, really tough woman, and she, you know, she can be a little hard on you sometimes, but you can tell she's one of those people that, you know, she doesn't like slackers, which I've never been a slacker. I've always been, you know, there at 3:30 in the morning, and I'm the last one to leave because I'm in the stalls for a long time with them, you know, doing them up. And so we got along great. You could talk to her about anything. She was just really, really good that way. And Susie as well.
Don't you think, Jennifer, if you're just breaking into the sport or you're trying to learn as much as you can from some of these more experienced trainers, and Josie Carroll in particular, you know, a Canadian Hall of Famer, right? She's as good as it gets, and she can win anywhere. It doesn't have to be in Canada. She's a top trainer anywhere she goes. But don't you think it's better if you have somebody that's more like Josie, where they're not going to let you slack off, that they're going to keep on you? Because if they don't, it's kind of like a coach and a player. They say you start worrying when the coach doesn't yell at you and get on you, right? Because it means they don't care anymore.
Oh, yeah. And when I went to Woodbine, I was helping her a little bit when my horse went to the farm. So a couple months there in the summer, I would go in a few days a week and help them out. And she is one of the very few barns around there that has all green grooms. Like, not all of them, but, you know, she has like four or five grooms there that haven't been grooms for very long. But she also has three or four assistant trainers and foremen that are going around and helping these kids develop these skills as grooms. She's got one girl, her name's Caitlin, her nickname's Slim. She's only been grooming, what, 2-3 years? And I think she won the most races in that barn this year. So I really respect Josie in that way. You know, she's taken these kids, you know, that don't know very much, and she's teaching them a lot, and she's teaching them to love our sport and, you know, get involved in our industry. And I think that's really important.
There was a time, by the way, Jennifer Stein is my special guest here on Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton, looking back on her first career victory, which came at the end of November. And she talked about her journey growing up in Vancouver and then having traveled to France and working with different trainers there, and then coming back to the States, spending some time here in the States, and, of course, now back in Canada. There was a time when you were growing up that you weren't 100% sure you were going to follow in your parents' footsteps and be involved with horses. You thought maybe you'd go a different path on the sports side of things. So tell me about that.
Yeah, I was always, I love soccer. I love to run. I love to climb. I love anything, you know, sports oriented, like throw at me. Like I'll do it. I'll learn how to do it. And soccer was my favorite sport. I was going to get a scholarship and go to university somewhere in California, and I ended up blowing my ACL and my meniscus, so I was done. I was playing on the junior Whitecaps women's team in Vancouver my high school year, and I ended up screwing up my knee. And of course, you know, when you're playing at that level, the last thing they want to see is, you know, 17-year-old girl who's already got, you know, 30-year-old woman problems. So I, you know, they couldn't reinstate my contract for them to move up into the women's White Caps, which is what I would have wanted to play for the women's White Caps team. So that was a little bit disappointing, and it definitely had to do with my quarter life crisis and going to France. but it all worked out the way it was supposed to. I still play soccer, and you know, we're still really active and all that kind of stuff, so it's okay.
Yeah, the teams you were on, I was reading about that. I think I read a quote where you said you were undefeated in two or three seasons. So you were on some really good teams.
I was on one good team. That was one good team. We were a team for 4 years. They were called the Poco Storm, and we were a select team. And, yeah, we won Coastal Cup championships twice. We had our goalie have her leg broken in our Coastal Cup championship game, and it was 0-0 going into overtime, and she got slid. She was a very aggressive goalie. She would come out at anyone, and she came out, and we were playing a pretty aggressive team from Surrey out in Wally, and she slid, checked her, and Corrigan's leg snapped, and we had to use a replacement goalie who was our defenseman's little sister. She was 13 years old, playing with our team, 17-year-old girls, and we ended up winning in overtime 3-0. We got angry.
Wow. Yeah. Moral of the story, don't mess with Jennifer Stein and her team around the barn if you stop by and see her. Where do you think do you ever think, Jennifer, where you would be right now if you hadn't suffered that knee injury?
Sometimes, but I mean, I think I would have probably just ended up going to university for some kind of kinesiology and playing soccer, and you know, maybe I would have gone farther in soccer. I mean, I always thought about playing on Team Canada. You know, that would have been really, really cool. Actually, one of the girls who I played with, she's a physiotherapist for Team Canada, the women's, so that's really neat. So I think I would have gotten into kinesiology, and then it probably would have brought me back to horses.
Yeah, the whole life could have turned out differently, though, right? It's amazing when, you know, things happen. At that time, it probably didn't seem like it was, you know, it was a good thing. I'm sure you were extremely disappointed, and it wasn't a good thing. But now that you look at where you are today and with your son and your husband, Justin, and, you know, all of those things came together because you had to take a different path with your life as opposed to maybe going on and playing soccer at a higher level.
Yeah, and I always joke and say, you know, when I was younger, when Justin was an apprentice at Hastings, you know, I was 12, 13 years old, and I was a tomboy. I didn't, you know, have any crushes on boys. I didn't think about boys. I just thought about sports and coming in on the weekends and making money and working at the racetrack and then, you know, going and doing my thing during the week. But I always said my first crush was on Justin Stein, and I remember playing cards with some trainers in the kitchen at Hastings, and I said, when I'm older, I'm going to marry the bug boy. And I did.
That's great. And Justin has ridden nearly 1,400 winners in his career. He has countless greatest stakes victories, and that's, you know, something that speaks to how good he is as a rider. But tell me about Justin as a husband, as a father, because people might not realize how good he is in that respect too.
Oh, he's so much fun. He's just an all around, just a great human being. He's got so much energy. He's got so much, you know, love and compassion, and he loves what he does. You know, he loves riding races. It's so much of who he is, and, you know, the way he is with our horses, the way he is with two-year-olds, you know, not a lot of jockeys and, you know, at his caliber, you know, can mold a baby, you know, the way that he helped mold the Backstretch Dude. And, you know, he came out west with me to break babies with my dad the year we had Benjamin. So it was the spring of 2020. And he came out and broke babies. And my dad, he's worked with a lot of people over the years. He said he's one of the best guys I've ever had work with babies. And, you know, it's pretty special. He's just an all-around great, great person. And I think everyone can feel that.
If folks are just tuning into the show and they missed our conversation in the first half, of course, they can go back and listen to the podcast afterwards on our website or on any major podcast platform. But they may have missed the fact that Justin, your husband, was aboard the Backstretch Dude for your first winner at the end of November. He rode the horse in the race. So it's all, let's face it, Jennifer, it's all fun and it's all great when everything goes well and you win the race. But let's say, for example, that you give a leg up to Justin and he's on one of your horses and he makes the wrong decision during a race. He gets stopped, he gets checked, he comes back, and he gets the horse beat, which is possible, right? What's that conversation going to be like afterwards as a husband and a wife together?
I'll just say, well, we'll go home and have a shot and talk about it later.
I thought for sure he'd be sleeping on the couch that night.
No, you can't hold grudges. You know, things happen in races. They're not machines, you know, they're horses. And, you know, sometimes he has, you know, sometimes he's ridden horses that to him it's felt like they've taken bad steps, you know, or been uncomfortable for a slight second. And instead of, you know, taking the chance and moving the horse on through and ignoring, you know, whatever you might have just felt, you know, he's always taken a second, check the horse up a little bit, let it get its stride back, and then try again. And sometimes, you know, the horse has gotten beat from that, but in another manner, it's, you know, you're better safe than sorry. And if a horse, you know, takes a funny step or doesn't feel comfortable in any part of the race, I'd rather him take a hold a little bit and we'll come back and try next time.
Jennifer, do you set goals for yourself and for your training profession?
Yeah, always. I think goals are really important. And being an athlete, you know, like I am, I always had goals when I was playing soccer. So, yeah, I've always set goals for myself.
What are some of the things that are high on your bucket list to accomplish?
I think it's every horseman's dream, you know, to make it to the Breeders' Cup. Making it to the Breeders' Cup and being competitive in a Breeders' Cup race are two different things. You know, you could send a horse there that's going to be 60-1, you know, and just go for the glitz and glam, but I wouldn't want to do that. You know, if I ever went to the Breeders' Cup, because I'm such a competitive person, I would go there all in. We're going to win. We're not, you know. Other goals, that's a long-term goal, you know, 10, 15, you know, however many years it takes to get that horse, but I will get that horse. That's going to take my stable of the Breeders' Cup, and when we get there, we're going to run good.
Breeders' Cup or Kentucky Derby? What do you think?
Breeders' Cup. Kentucky Derby would be great, you know, if you get that three-year-old, you know, firecracker. And being a two-year-old specialist, like I consider myself to almost be, you know, it could happen. You know, you set a horse up for its three-year-old year, you know, when it's two. I think it's really important, you know.
How about Kentucky Derby or King's Plate?
Kentucky Derby.
Come on, you're Canadian. Don't you have to say King's Plate?
No. No, it'd be pretty special when the King's Plate in Canada, for sure. But you know, nothing's like the Derby.
The King's Plate. Well, of course, we were there to broadcast the race and cover it here on the network. And of course, then it was the Queen's Plate here a few years ago. And my goodness, one of the really cool. That's one thing I love about international racing is that the pageantry that surrounds the event is really unparalleled to anything we see here in the United States.
Yep. It's really special. It gets broadcasted everywhere.
As you're embarking on your own training career now, what are some of the things that you're trying to keep in mind? You talked about some of your longer term goals, but what are some of the immediate things you're trying to keep in mind to make sure you get off to a fast start here in 2023 when racing resumes?
Having a good spring training. Spring training is so important. Sometimes you ship into Woodbine in March, so the track's frozen. You have to shed row for, you know, weeks on end, and the horses get sharp and they hurt themselves in the stall. And You know, Woodbine that way, you know, Canada in general is difficult sometimes. But I think if we have a good start here at the farm and ship in first week of April, you know, when the main track, the Tapeta, opens, I think it'll be smooth sailing. It's just so important. And, you know, I'm very hands-on that way. So spring training to me is so important. The filly that's coming out to me, Catch the Dream, she's at West Anna, which is, I mean, I don't know if you've ever heard of it. It's in Alberta in Red Deer, and it is state-of-the-art. They have everything. They've got aqua treadmill. They've got, I mean, they have individual turnout, and the paddocks are pristine and everything. The track is sheer ice. But,
wow.
Yeah, so, I mean, you know, spring training in Canada, it's always tough. It would be nice, you know, to be able to spring train somewhere warm. But at the same time, I feel that spring training in Canada is better for your horse's joints. You know, like the snow, the harder ground, it really helps toughen up the horse's joints. It keeps their ankles nice and set, you know, their knees nice and cold and tight. It really does wonders for that kind of thing.
Yeah, fascinating. That's a great comments there, and that's how we're going to end the show, visiting with Jennifer Stein here on Trainer Talk presented by Fasig Tipton. Jennifer, just about out of time, but I do want to thank you for spending this hour with us and letting us know your story and, you know, sharing some of your top memories there and some of the folks you've worked with and telling their stories. It has really been great, and I want to wish you all the best going forward here in 2023. I know you're going to be a success, and to you and to Justin, Happy New Year.
Thanks for having me, Mike.
Yeah, Jennifer Stein here on Trainer Talk presented by Fasig Tipton. Listen, when you learn from some of the people that she has learned from and you work from some of the best, you can't help but think that that experience isn't going to pay off in a big way now that she is embarking on her own training career. She's a 25% trainer right now, 1-for-4. You can always say that, and you can always say it with accuracy and confidence. She's fantastic. My thanks to Jennifer. My thanks to my producer, Lee Delapina, in our Lexington studio. Don't forget to follow the podcast at HRRN on Twitter, Horse Racing Radio Network on Facebook. We'll post it there, and you can check it out, horseracingradio.net, and on every major podcast platform. I'm Mike Penna. Thanks for listening to this edition of Trainer Talk presented by Fasig Tipton.